Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. I want to note that we're actually taping this in the middle of the week. We pre-record Pirate Money so we can enjoy some time with our families on the weekend, but it's Saturday for you, and it's an important Saturday. The weather should be crisp, but we're also facing football season, but something far more important than the election. And the election's coming up. We're going to have a chance here to talk about some of the problems that we're facing in this country with the election, but one of those is external enemies. And you need to think through the voting. That matters. That's going to have a direct and important impact on what we're doing. But the election day is Tuesday. If you haven't voted yet through early voting or by mail, and you're eligible, if you're actually a registered voter, please go do that. There's a lot at stake in this election. We'll talk about some of that. And then we have, of course, Thanksgiving right around the corner. So I'm joined today, as most Saturdays we are, by the co-host, my colleague of more than a decade and friend for over 30 years, the amazing Mike Carter. Welcome, Mike.
Good to be here, Kevin. As we talk about external threats, I've been focused a lot on what's happening domestically as it relates to threats. But this one is an external threat that's going to have huge impact domestically.
Oh, it is. It's part of a globalist plan. It's written in my book, According to Plan, but the foreign elements working through the domestic elements. And, you know, we have a vice president who was trained by her father, who was an absolute Marxist, and she chose for her vice president candidate, Tim Walz, who is beholden to the Communist Party. He just loves them, carries around Mao's little red book, according to some sources, and so forth. So it's an important thing. Now, we're going to be discussing some of the events that took place in October. One that you may have heard about was a meeting of the BRICS nations. Now, I'm not talking about those things that you build a home with. You used to work for a home builder.
Yeah, that's the normal thing you think of when you think of BRICS, but this is much more impactful.
Yeah, these BRICS are a bunch of nations that started with Brazil, Russia, India, and China, BRIC, and then added South Africa for the S. I don't know if they did that because South Africa has a lot of gold, or they did it because it sounds cooler to say BRICS than BRIC. But
it's a branding thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And they got it. I see Saudi Arabia's kind of been trying to decide if they're in or they're out, so they can always substitute whatever the US says at some point, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think Saudi Arabia's in. They just haven't officially announced it. That should happen, this month. But the purpose of what we're doing here is to inform you with facts and information. We're not trying to build fear, but we also can't be ignorant, can't put our heads in the sand. BRICS nations are in the headlines, and so we have to talk about them. These nations meet multiple times a year. They just met in October, the most recent in Kazan, Russia, October 22nd through 24th. And Russia holds the presidency this year, and they've committed this group of nations to 3 years of focus. And I'm going to read it to you. Russia said it will focus on promoting the entire range of partnership and cooperation within the framework of the association on three key tracks: politics and security, the economy and finance, and cultural and humanitarian ties. Now, if you've heard of the BRICS nations, you probably did so in the context of their effort to undermine the American dollar and international trade, and that assessment is accurate.
Now, they're holding this in Russia. They certainly don't have any interest in any adverse reaction to us right now, do they?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they actually produced a report. The Russians led it, and they produced it's a very long report that explains Project Dunbar and how they have to get off the dollar for economic, technology, political, and moral reasons. And they use simple things like they say, you know, the technology of the Swiss system and the American system, that's antiquated. It's like operating on Windows, early versions, Windows 3 or something. And economically, it's very expensive for nations to translate into the U.S. dollar and then back. And politically, you know, the Americans are trying to sanction everybody. And then moral reasons, America's not necessarily the best moral actor in the world. So,
in sales, you always try and justify logically, but it's about the emotional piece that causes people to move. And I think there's been a lot of emotional things that have hit many of these BRICS countries that says, hey, we need to make this thing happen. And here's logically why we need to make it happen.
All right. So to help you understand this, we're going to cover seven key points: the history of BRICS, how we got here, who's now involved, what they're planning and doing and why, why the current moment is so critical. Can they do it? Can the BRICS nations destroy King Dollar? What would it mean to you if they did, or to our nation and to the world as a whole? And how do we respond, both at the personal level, the community level, and as a nation? So let's start with history. I've got some personal knowledge of this. I mean, our good friend Russell and I went to Moscow in 2006. We were the guest of Vladimir Putin. I was working for the great John Templeton at the time, trying to set up an investment account. Of course, that's why they invited me in. Templeton offered what he said were the top 20 managers in the world, $50 million each. And he picked me for some reason. And Russell and I went and we met. We didn't meet Putin, but we met a lot of his ministers. We were his guests that summer. We attended a securities conference. We got to meet Russian companies. We got cool tours and, you know, a lot of other fun things. But what we discovered while we were there was a nation that was tired of the traditional world order. In some ways, they deeply resented America for the fall of the Soviet Union. They understood that the Cold War was won by economics, and they planned to restart an economic war. They didn't say it easily. They didn't say it directly, but they said it. And they wanted a seat back at the global table. That's the context at which Vladimir Putin decided we're going to build, at that time, in 2006, he said, that's where we're going to build BRICS. Do you have that history from their website where it says on when they started? Because Russell and I were there in June of 2006. Let's read from the website the history, if you've got that.
History of BRICS, just from the top here?
Yeah, just to start with on 20 September.
All right. On 20 September 2006, the first BRICS ministerial meeting was held at the proposal of Russian President Vladimir Putin on the margins of a UN General Assembly sessions in New York. Foreign ministers of Russia, Brazil, China, and the Indian defense minister took part in the meeting. They expressed their interest in expanding multilateral cooperation.
Wow. So that's where it started, right after we met with Putin. And then on 16 May 2008, they hosted a meeting on the initiative of Russia. This is during the middle of the American financial crisis. And keep in mind, this is when Vladimir Putin ordered Russia to sell all of their U.S. holdings of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac during the housing crisis. This was reported through, then Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson heard it from the Chinese. The Chinese said, hey, do you know they're trying to undermine America?
It's amazing that this has been here going on since 2006, and we're just now, I mean, this is not an idea of the month here. This is something that's been in the works a long time. What was our debt back then?
Oh, gosh. In 2006, our debt was like $8 trillion.
Yeah, and we're 36 now.
Yeah, 36 trillion. So this is the history. It was designed for this. Now, point number two, who's involved in this? Well, we've got Brazil, Russia, India, China. They added Saudi Arabia. But, you know, there are like 30 or 40 other countries that are begging to be part of this.
Yeah, I've heard even more considering it. So, up to 160 plus are looking at it. So that's going to have impact.
Well, it's going to have impact. People don't realize this. Here's a chart from Statista using IMF data on the BRICS nations versus the G7 countries. G7 would be the biggest Western countries. When Putin started this in 2006, the U.S. dominated G7 was like 40% of the world's economy, and the BRICS nations combined were under 25%. From then till now, 2006, so we're 18 years, they've grown to 35% almost of the world's economies, and the American economies have dropped below 30%. So they really have come together at a time that is displacing the American-led world economic order, according to the International Monetary Fund, based on purchasing power parity. That's something we'll have to talk about and explain, the difference between purchasing power parity and just nominal economics.
Well, this ought to wake people up. I mean, that's a shocking number to me.
Yeah, no, it is unbelievable that Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now South Africa are bigger combined than the G7 world's European and American economies. We'll be right back after the break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Hey, Mike, if someone was going to ask you what were the four largest economies in the world, what do you think the average person thinks are the four largest economies of the world? Just to guess.
Well, hopefully America is still there. I would think that China is out China. There in a pretty significant way. Russia certainly has the political impact. I'm not sure what their economic impact is.
No, they're much smaller.
But average citizen, so I guess I'm pretty average because I've got two of the four right now.
Would you say Germany?
India's up and
Germany,
coming.
Germany, yeah. According to traditional way that you measure economics, the five largest are United States, China, Germany, Japan, India, and the United Kingdom.
Okay, I need to read the radio notes here because I do see that now. But that was an average person just pulling it out of the top of my head.
Yeah, now let's look at what they actually are. According to real gross domestic product purchasing power parity. Now, let me explain that. Purchasing power parity doesn't say an economy is a certain size based on their reported output in their currency. It actually says, well, how did the currencies relate? So they took a basket of goods like a McDonald's hamburger, a car, you know, the cost of an iPhone, maybe a price of groceries, and they said, well, how much is the currency worth compared to those compared to another nation? And let's just make them all even so that one unit would buy the same amount of goods and services in a different country as it does in ours. So that's put in real terms, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, do you see the chart here in real terms, the actual four largest economies?
Now I feel pretty good about my original answer because I see I didn't have them in the right order, but I said China, United States, India, and Russia. I think I said United States, China, Russia, and India. So,
well, most people don't realize that four of the five or three of the four largest economies in the world are BRICS nations. Russia, India, and China, and Brazil's not that far down the list. So the Chinese economy in purchasing power parity is $31.2 trillion. This is according to the CIA, right? I'm taking this straight from the CIA. China's economy, $31.2 trillion. U.S. economy, $24.6 trillion. India's $13.1 trillion. And Russia, $5.8 trillion. Bottom line, we think of economies in the way, because the dollar's been so strong in comparison, we think United States is the largest, then China, then Russia, then Japan, or China, then Germany, then Japan. But in actuality, it is China, U.S., India, and Russia. Hmm. That's shocking that three of the four largest are a part of this BRICS nation.
Yeah.
We share that just so people will recognize and understand that when I say BRICS nations, I'm not talking about fly-by-night third world countries. 20 years ago, they were all considered emerging markets or third world nations. Today, they're three of the four largest economies in the world, according to what the CIA says.
Yeah. You know, and your background with Templeton, you've been watching what's been going on globally and investment opportunities globally and all that stuff. Did you anticipate this much growth and change back, you know, when was that? 20 years ago?
Let me tell you who did. John Templeton did. And that's part of why we went to Russia. I've been to China on an investment trip and seen the Shenzhen Stock Exchange. I've been to Moscow on an investment trip. John Templeton recognized the growth pattern that they would be using. Three of the top four economies in the world are really part of this BRICS nation. We think, and what the news reports to us, is three of the top four are traditional American-centric economies. That's no longer the case. BRICS is picking up steam around the world. Nations are flocking to join BRICS to be anti-American-centric. They've six additional nations obtained memberships this year, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Ethiopia, Iran, and Egypt, plus Argentina. Five of them have agreed to accept joining BRICS, and they joined this October.
Wow. Well, and I saw, while we still have control of that reserve currency, I saw a report the other day that I was surprised, up to 60 nations we have sanctions on right now, or
Which is one of the big reasons why nations. So 40 nations have expressed interest in joining BRICS, making it perhaps the most significant group of nations outside of the United Nations itself, Turkey and Malaysia leading the charge of the new 40, and they're rushing to join BRICS. And that leads us to our third point. Why? And you brought it up. The 60 nations have been sanctioned. Let me quote International Banker. So why are so many nations now clamoring to join BRICS? Many view BRICS as the result, BRICS plus, that'd be all these new nations coming in, as the result of efforts made by China and Russia to develop alternative economic frameworks that challenge the existing Western-dominated international order. For many seeking to join the bloc, BRICS plus membership represents part of a new, fairer world, their term, world order that flies in the face of a financial system led by institutions such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, which are widely perceived to be solidly under hegemonic U.S.-led Western control. That's the attraction. The main point is it goes back to my time in Russia, in Moscow, and then at the DOD. BRIC was Putin's dream to dethrone the American dollar and has built a large coalition of agreeing nations. Hmm. Do you remember that article in the Wall Street Journal? I talk about it all the time as if things weren't bad enough. Do you remember that?
You were walking the halls of Washington back in, 2009, 2010 with us. And that was, China's our friend,
I didn't say that.
But that was the kind of conversation that we heard back then. And here is someone, a Russian professor, predicting a lot of what we're seeing happening today. I mean, I'm not saying it's happening today, but we're seeing the cultural impact and the debt and everything that he talked about happening. And from there, he predicts what? A breakup of the U.S.?
Yeah, no. This is December 29th, 2008, when it was published. And Igor Panarin, who was a buddy of Vladimir Putin's, I didn't meet him in Moscow, but he's well known. He was in the KGB with Vladimir Putin. And he came out as a Russian studies professor, and he was predicting America would have a civil war and divide into five different nations. And like the South East would go with Texas and Mexico, and the Northeast would go with Europe, and the upper Midwest would go to Canada, and the West would go to China, and then Alaska would go to Russia. And the idea that they were saying is, they said moral degradation, they said open borders and immigration, and then they said a collapse of the dollar because other nations would turn away from our currency. That's what they were talking about.
Sounds like the playbook is going right as anticipated, although I hope the separation of the states is. And I don't know if I see the breakup of the states that way, but we certainly see a red state, blue state division that I never imagined we'd be at this
point.
And
mass immigration.
Yes.
And moral degradation. Yeah. And they said U.S. foreign debt's a pyramid scheme, and China and Russia would usurp. That means they would take our place as the global financial regulator. You know, China wasn't on board in 2008. I mean, that was clear because they announced through Hank Paulson, Russia's trying to crash your currency and all that. But on 2013, a man named Xi Jinping came to power, and one of his first proclamations was China calls for the world to be de-Americanized. And when they described it, they called for an end to the use of the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency, a step that would ensure the international community could maintain a safe distance from the side effects of domestic political turmoil in the United States. That's what they've been calling for.
Wow. That,
and, you know, I have to admit, even Elon Musk admit they have a point.
Yeah.
Elon Musk tweet?
Yeah. You know, if you weaponize your currency enough times, other countries will stop using it. And I think we're certainly seeing that impact and certainly driving motivation for change out there. While a lot of our politicians, and probably, we've had Jared Bernstein and his video talking about modern monetary theory and so forth. I'm not sure we're on top of our own game here.
Now, the BRICS goals are to create a trading bloc, which they've done. Trading is up as much as 57% between nations in the bloc. It's approaching $300 billion this year without us in any way involved. No dollars, nothing. Two, alternative financial platforms, SWIFT for the West, but CHIPS, C-I-P-S, which is China's version, for the rest of them, or a new development bank. They're building alternative systems. Number three, end America's exorbitant privilege because we have the dollar's reserve currency. They point out rightly that the Federal Reserve tries to focus on the United States and not the globe, and therefore most economic policy is U.S.-centric. And number four, they want a Bretton Woods where the dollar is no longer needed, and they plan to back the currency by gold. And all of that comes out of a Reuters article. Russia calls on BRICS partners to create an alternative to the IMF. Hmm. That's Reuters. This isn't conspiracy theory. This is Reuters. And it says the IMF and the World Bank are not performing their roles. They're not working with the interests of the BRICS countries. It's so necessary to form new conditions or even new institutions.
So what does this mean to me? And if you're listening out there, I mean, I remember, Kevin, as we were talking about some of this stuff coming 10, 12 years ago, if we lost our reserve currency status, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if we did, they were talking about a 40% hit to our economy overnight. Are those numbers realistic?
Yeah, well, that's why the current, right, so here are 7 points, history of BRICS, who's now involved, what they're planning and doing and why. We've covered that. And we're not finished on that, by the way.
Okay.
Why the current moment is so critical, can they do it? That is dethrone King Dollar. And what it means to you, we'll get to that. So you've got to listen to this entire program to get the full context, because this will impact you. But if you don't understand all these points, you won't know how to prepare. It's very important. So let's get back to, and the last point is, how do we respond at the personal level, the community level, as a nation? Let's get back to this notion, though, what they're doing. Here it is, Jerusalem Post, October 14th, as BRICS accumulate gold, Western banks continue to short sell. That means in the West, we're getting out of gold, and the BRICS nations are accumulating gold.
You know, that reminds me, I was with Jason Cousins of GlintPay the other day, and he was talking about how he went to the vault in Switzerland, Zurich, Switzerland, to check on the gold that's in his account, or in the GlintPay system there.
Right.
And pallets of gold stacked to the ceiling. And he's like, where is all this going? And they said, China. They're buying all the gold they can buy right now.
Brazil, Russia, and China. All right, so here's another Jerusalem Post article. BRICS are selling a lot of treasuries and buying gold. He's a financial analyst, and there's an incredible chart in there. I wish you could see it if you're listening on the radio. If you're listening on the radio and you want to see these things, go to piratemoneyradio.com, and you can watch, because we're filming this as well as airing it on the radio. Central bank purchases of gold, there's a blue chart, starts from near zero in 2013, and then the red line is the foreign official purchases of U.S. treasuries. The blue line's going straight up, and the red line is going down. They're selling treasuries and buying gold. It's very dramatic. When we come back, we're going to talk about pirate money, which is a solution, how you can participate in exactly what they're doing to save your family.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm talking with the great Mike Carter, who's been leading an effort to help you do exactly what central banks around the world are doing. Central banks are buying gold, and they're buying it rapidly. They've been selling U.S. Treasury bonds to do it, which is not good for our country. Foreign holdings of U.S. treasuries are down. The BRICS nations have decided they want to get off the American financial system, and they want to get on a gold-backed system. And Mike, you've been working on this to give people the option in America, individuals, the option to be on a gold-backed system that's under Article 1, Section 10 of the states.
Yeah, and just to start out again, we don't sell gold. We don't have gold sponsors, anything like that. We're facilitating legislation that's going to allow you be able to do the same thing these other central banks are doing now, which is saying, hey, we want a safe haven store of value in gold and silver. And this is an opportunity for states to implement Article 1, Section 10. States can have their own legal tender as long as it's backed by gold
from
and silver.
From the Constitution.
Yeah, it's in the Constitution. And then we're overlaying a technology that the states will look at. Each state will have probably different ways of going about this, but a technology where you can put your money in a bullion depository and then with a debit card, be able to spend that gold anywhere you spend MasterCard. It makes gold functional currency, makes it transactional. And while there's private companies that are leading this right now, it's important that the states get behind this. And that's what we've been working so hard on across the country right now, and where we're seeing momentum from really the whole Southeast, and now we're moving up into the Midwest, a little bit in the West out there. But three things that states need to do: they need to have they create trust. You know what you're buying is actually gold, and it's real, it's going to be secure. You know, in Texas, we just had a proposition on the ballot where we had 77% of people saying, I want the ability to do this. I want the ability to take gold in the Texas Bullion Depository and transact it.
It's like 1.6 million Texans.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. And that was organic, no promotion. That was just put on the ballot. People said, I like this idea. And we know since the central banks aren't the only smart people out there. Citizens are saying it, but they don't know how to buy gold. They don't know how to do that. And if a state's involved behind that, now that's a whole new level of trust. Now, the second reason we see that states need to be involved with this is the taxes. Right now, gold, if you have gold coins and silver, and we think that's a good idea, it's prudent to have some of that on hand in case you need something physical at some point.
Certainly foreign nations are having gold and silver. Yeah. And they're buying it like crazy.
Yeah. But we all know if we want to spend or transact with that gold and silver, we can't go to the coffee shop. We can't easily do that with those coins. Being able to take this and make it functional currency, which technology does today, to be able to spend that anywhere I spend a debit card, now it meets that, what we see as that IRS definition of functional currency. You can buy a stick of gum, you can pay your taxes with it, you can pay a car payment with it. Therefore, it will not be taxed like gold and silver are.
That's
now.
That's our hope, absolutely.
Yeah, and they're taxed at 28%, even higher than stocks out there. The third one is taking. So we saw that executive order under Roosevelt. I was just with a group of people last night, and this topic, very topic, came up. And when that Roosevelt came out in 33 and said, hey, all people need to turn their gold in because it's not moving, it's not helping the economy, people are holding on to it, he did not say states. And with the states holding the gold, we think that's another layer of protection. And then you got the right AGs out there that say, hey, you're not going to take the gold away from the states. This is our constitutional right. And so that's a big idea, those three T's: trust, taxes, and taking.
Yeah, and all of this is mentioned in the book, Pirate Money. If you want more information, go to piratemoneybook.com and you can get that. But Mike, you've been working. We've got something like 30 states who've shown interest, and we expect legislation entered in Texas for sure. And how many other states?
I think we've got legislators that are looking at and trying to put forth legislation in well over 20 states. There's another 10 that have reached out and said, we're trying to understand this, and we're thinking about what we can do as we go to this next
Texas,
session.
We're looking at Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Alaska, Utah. In fact, I'm on the Utah study group where we looked at this. Kansas, Iowa. I mean, just an amazing grouping of states.
And it's real. And we're seeing bipartisan support. We're seeing interest from treasurers out there. Utah did a phenomenal job on their study and had some real thought leaders there saying, this is a smart thing to do.
Yeah, well, we're going to cover a lot of this, by the way. If you listen to Pirate Money Radio, next week we're going to have the election special. We're going to talk about what happened in the election. The week after that is going to be all on gold. And so you'll want to absolutely tune into that one, or you want to go to AFR.net or piratemoneyradio.com, and you can hear, or wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And we're talking about money. Today, the BRICS want to have their own money. Well, really, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And we just covered point number three. What do the BRICS nations want to do? They want to take us away from the American dollar and take us onto gold. Is that going to happen? Point number four, the time, unfortunately, is now. Do you have those 7 points from the time is now, Mike?
7 points, yes. BRICS summit in Russia just concluded. Election season turmoil, especially if Harris wins, pro-deep state, you got Ukraine, all that stuff. October surprise. We're seeing some things kind of percolating right now in the October stuff. I don't know what that means, but we clearly see a divided America. the world dividing on three huge fronts, Ukraine, Taiwan, Israel. BRICS sufficiently large enough to challenge what's going on out there now.
That's obvious, yeah.
Technology that allows for a dollar disintermediation. Petrodollar, we've seen that going away, or the agreements, the formal agreements have ended out there. And, you know, we've got American debt that's $36 trillion, up $8 trillion. I just asked you that number earlier. Up $8 trillion from 2006. Who would ever believed we'd be 4.5 times higher than we were in 2006? It's you can't even comprehend how much debt that is. China once held 12% of our debt. Now it's down to 2% of our outstanding debt. What are they doing? What are they thinking right now? They're thinking, I'd rather have gold than treasuries.
Yeah. All right. So you may have questions. You may be thinking things like that. If you want to send them to us by email, you can send them to afr@piratemoneyradio.com. So that's the first 4 points. Point number 5, can they do it? And let's consider the gravity of this. If Russia and China can lead a coalition of the largest nations' economies in the world to dethrone America, we live in a very different world. Has it really come to that? Want the good news or the bad news, Mike?
Well, I always like the good news, but we can temper it with the reality.
All right, let's start with the good news. The hopeful news is, you know, you've heard this analogy. When a man goes to put on a shirt in the morning, he looks for the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry. His wife's on vacation for a couple of weeks, and he goes and is like, this one doesn't smell too bad. The American dollar doesn't smell too bad compared to other currencies. Our America's economy is the strongest among major economies at the moment. They just had an Economist magazine on how we've held up longer, and it does take a long time to lose the reserve currency status. So over the past 6 months, I participated in the Utah Precious Metals Work Group meeting in Salt Lake, preparing a study on whether Utah should undertake pirate money legislation. It's a prestigious committee. I'm honored to be a part of it. State senators, state reps, state treasurer Marlo Oaks, the head of the Utah Bankers Association, a representative from the governor, and even a former vice chair of the Federal Reserve, Randall Quarles. We covered a lot in our final meeting, which happened October 9th, and we had some very strong thoughts from the former vice chair at the Fed. I want you to listen to his public statement on whether the dollar's at risk. Roll clip one.
I mean, China obviously would like to replace the dollar. The BRICS would like to replace the dollar. There is zero possibility of that being a serious threat to the dollar in our lifetimes. Over the course of a long time, the pound lost its status, and the dollar could conceivably lose its status. But again, not in our lifetimes. What's the option for the issue with the role of the dollar in the global payment system and as a global reserve currency, which are two slightly different things, obviously, is the old story of the campers and the bear. You don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the other camper. And there is no other camper on the planet that is superior to the dollar. Do people really want to own a renminbi instead of a dollar? Do they really want to own a euro instead of the dollar? Some of you have heard that story, but, you know, without going into the reasons for it, the Gulf nations 20 years ago were making noise that they were going to stop buying U.S. Treasury securities. So at that time, I had my Treasury hat on, and I went and circled around the Gulf and talked to all the finance ministers and the central bank governors. The loudest was the central bank governor of Abu Dhabi, who had been saying, we absolutely are going to stop buying dollars. And so I met with him, and he had press on the steps of the central bank. You know, he repeated again, we're stopping buying dollars. And so then I walk in, and I say, Governor, I'm very sorry for the provocation that had resulted in this. It wasn't the government's fault. And he said, don't worry. I just have to say that for public consumption. Of course, we're going to continue to use the dollar. What's our option? I could buy euros, I suppose. And then what? Invest them in Italy? It's just not an option. So again, none of that says that we should not be eagerly pursuing this. But we shouldn't raise concerns on the part of the populace about the standard payment system, and that they really need to be prepared and they need to be shifting to gold. They should shift to gold if they want, and we should facilitate that. That's a forward-thinking state.
That's pretty strong. Not in our lifetimes, because there's no alternative. You just have to outrun the bear, is what he said. For the record, I don't know if BRICS can dethrone the dollar. I try to be careful and limit my comments to say they're going to try, not to say they're going to succeed. Now, by the way, it's important to note that even though the former vice chair at the Fed does not see the dollar at risk, he absolutely believes Americans should have a currency choice, optional, transactional gold and silver, a.k.a. pirate money we've talked about. Let's listen to his other clip on this.
There is no realistic risk that the dollar stops being the world's reserve currency in the lifetimes of anybody on this call. But people should be free to use gold if they want to, if they're more speculative. I'm 100% in favor of that. But if, as part of the legislation, we say we're doing this because the dollar is going to hell in a handbasket, then you're going to have a lot of people who will then say, oh, then I want to go into gold. And then when gold shifts in value, they'll say, you misled me. And we just shouldn't do that. We should just simply establish this on the grounds of we're providing options for our citizens, as opposed to we're preparing for the end of the United States as the global reserve currency.
I truly hope that Vice Chair Quarles is right. I'm grateful for his encouragement for his states to move forward on freedom grounds. But there may be another side to this. We'll have to look at that. That was the good side, and I hope he's right, and he may well be right. He knows more than I do. He's much smarter than I am in so many of these things. But if he's wrong, we have to consider the bad side, which we will do when we come back right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And I'm here with Mike Carter. And Mike, you watched, we were testifying in that Utah study committee, and Randall Quarles, brilliant guy, former vice chair, I hope he someday becomes chairman of the Federal Reserve in the Trump administration. But he said, don't worry about the dollar, but still move forward with transactional gold and silver.
Yeah, which was great confirmation. Obviously, a very smart person that this is wise to have as an option out there. And that's all we're saying. Give people optionality. And I hope he's right, like you said. But I think of all these big corporations that said, hey, you know, Kodak, we don't need to get into the digital game or Polaroid, you know, and what happens? And I hope that's not happening to us as we slowly kind of boil in the pot and not realize what's going on out there. And there are a lot of systems that need to take place. Getting all these countries to agree politically, not necessarily easily. So I understand completely where he's coming from, but I like the idea of optionality.
Yeah, I hope he's right. But that means if we have time, then we need to do something in preparation for our kids, grandkids, and so forth. The BRICS nations have clearly put out a report that says they want to replace the dollar. There's no doubt. And history has shown that no reserve currency lasts forever. I mean, we had the Portuguese, then Spain, then Netherlands, then France, then Britain, and then the United States. And we're in that 80 to 100-year window for a reserve currency lasting, and China and Russia are actively. And they have been, you know, China since 2013, Russia since 2006, when I was there. They've been actively attempting to dethrone the dollar. There's no question about that.
Anyway. Just looking at that graph is kind of interesting. I mean, we're not quite as big as the Britain one before they failed, but Spain had a pretty good run. And they might be coming back into the game here as we talk pirate money.
Yeah, no, Spain, gold doubloons and silver pieces of eight. And we'll be talking about that next week. We'll be covering the election and what happened. And the week after that, on Pirate Money Radio, we'll be talking about gold and silver. But here's some other things that bother me. We've never had this much debt. We pay $1 trillion a year in interest only. That's over $3 billion a day in interest only. It's growing. We will have $150 trillion in debt in less than 30 years by most economist projections, and those are conservative projections. Other nations seem highly motivated, even though they've struggled for traction. We've got a video from RT. Admittedly, it's Russian propaganda when you see RT. It was deleted from YouTube, but we found it on Rumble. And it's an interview with a former IMF executive director. He's seemingly very credible, Paulo Batista Jr. He served as executive director of the International Monetary Fund from 2007 through 2015. Let's listen to what he has to say about the U.S. dollar.
And the more important thing that would be to have a joint reserve currency, a new reserve currency, that's still in the works. It's still a difficult process for several reasons that we can go into if you want.
Well, how do you see this process playing out? If we are in the process of de-dollarization, what's it going to take for the world to wean itself off that dependence?
Well, the dollar is a dangerous currency, let's put it this way. See what happened to the Russian reserves, huh? It's been weaponized by the United States. So the United States is the main enemy of the dollar. It has weakened trust in the dollar. So many countries are now seeking for alternatives. Huh? And it is expected that the BRICS jointly can provide such an alternative. Because payments in national currencies, that's fine. But there's a limit to that. You can't go beyond that limit if you don't have a new reserve currency as an alternative to the U.S. dollar.
The use of sanctions is one of the favored forms of punishment, if you like, for the United States. And to what extent do you think the use of sanctions has promoted this trend of de-dollarization?
Yes, it has. In fact, these sanctions, this weaponization of the U.S. financial system of the dollar has backfired, has weakened the dollar, and has weakened trust in the Western financial system. So what you see is countries struggling to find alternatives, to de-dollarize their reserves, to de-dollarize their international transactions, to seek alternatives to the Western financial system of payments. And that's something the BRICS have been working on under the Russian presidency of the BRICS this year. No?
So we've got two viewpoints. One is Randall Quarles, who says it's not going to happen in our lifetimes. The dollar will remain the reserve currency of the world. And then you have the BRICS nations that have come together, very powerful nations now, and they say we're going to get off the dollar as quickly as possible. And sitting in the middle of it, central bank digital currencies, you know, where if we move away from the dollar to a CBDC and then they become interoperable, maybe that's the West's answer. But Brazil, Russia, India, China, they want their own version of that and they want to be in control. I don't know who's going to win. What do you think, Mike?
What I heard in that commentary was a passion and that emotional connection to say, hey, this is hurting us and it's not fair to us. And when you have that type of feeling, you're going to work extra hard to say, how do we make this work? And again, we say it's difficult to get these nations to say, well, I trust China's currency or this or that to come up with what that's going to be. But they are getting closer, it appears, to creating a settlement system, whatever that looks like, that's going to get them one step closer.
Just imagine if somebody cut off your credit card and it was, you know, Bank of XYZ, and they cut off your credit card and you could no longer spend and they controlled your behavior with it. You'd be like, I don't want to deal with that bank. Let's start our own bank. And I've seen a lot of people do things like that. So time will tell. But if they do succeed, point number six, what would it mean if we lost the reserve currency status? How would that impact us?
Now you're getting back to my original question. That's the scary number to me is, you know, if it is that 40% impact overnight, you know, that's a big hit. And, you know, how do we prepare? What do we do in that kind of case?
Well, if there were a supply chain cutoff, so oil costs $75 a barrel and all of a sudden it costs $200 a barrel, would that impact people? Of course, their gas prices would go straight up. Why? Because we import a lot of our oil. Actually, we're near energy independent, which is another good reason to consider how you're going to vote. Are you going to vote for somebody that wants to ban fracking, even if they change their official wording, but they've said, you know, for 50 years, ban fracking, and then all of a sudden, no, I'm not going to ban. Yeah, are you going to vote for that or somebody that wants drill, drill, drill? I want somebody that votes drill.
And so much of our inflation is energy dependent. And so if we can't control that energy piece, inflation, we already see what's happening with the dollar when inflation hits, so that gold becomes a standard store of value again.
Yeah, so medicines, clothing, food, all these things that we import would become instantly more expensive because the dollar loses reserve currency status. With our debt, How would we sell our debt? Well, who's going to buy it? If foreign nations don't buy it, then we'll just have to print more money. That's the path Zimbabwe took, and that led them to bankruptcy. We'll probably usher in central bank digital currency almost immediately, which could be total control and social credit scores. We covered this in episode 12 of Pirate Money Radio. Officially, we would no longer be the world's largest economy, couldn't finance our military. We'd be prone, you know, we've got open borders, prone to invasion. A lot of bad things happen if we suddenly lost the reserve currency status. Hopefully, Randy Quarles is right. And we won't do it. So what
we and I think what we're also seeing is suddenly losing is probably not realistic, right? It's probably going to be a matter of stages or steps.
I don't know, because when you have a disruptive technology that's dropped in place, if they could create a better payment system that was on the blockchain and other nations just jump. I mean, they're seeing 40 nations or 100 nations wanting to join the BRICS alliance. The only reason you want to join it is to get away from America's control and American sanctions. So it's still possible. It could be a suddenly. But maybe that's a low probability event. It's a tail risk event, as they say. But you know, what do we do, suddenly or slowly? Either way, you know, 20 years ago, if I told you China would be the world's largest economy, and I'm not sure that it is, but that's what CIA says today, and it would be China and India and Russia would be three of the four largest economies. He's like, there's no way.
No, well, we heard that in D.C. at the time. They would never work against us. They need us.
Yeah.
I don't think they need us as much anymore.
So it's suddenly like the frog being boiled in the kettle. All right, so what do we do? Point number seven, this is Pirate Money Radio. We have solutions. What do we do about this? What's the number one thing that we could do?
Prayer.
Yeah, amen. As a pirate, I say, pray. Yes, absolutely. 2 Timothy 1:7, God's not given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind. Let's get our sound mind operating here. Let's pray and bring God into this and use wisdom. I am Proverbs 22:3 is pretty clear. It says, if you see trouble coming, prepare for it. So we're talking about preparing for it. Maybe you diversify your investments, not out of fear, but for the purpose of liberty. And that was the message of Randall Quarles. Mm-hmm. The former vice chair of the Fed says, we ought to do for liberty, go to transactional gold and silver on an optional basis at the state level, not because we're afraid of something, but because it offers liberty and a choice, and people should have choices in America.
Yeah, they should, and we should have an easy way for people to do it. Because I can't tell you how many viewers or listeners on the radio station here call and say, I don't know how to go about buying gold. How do I do that? And the states getting involved makes that easier, builds that trust, takes care of the tax potential piece and that taking.
And speaking of trust, you ought to trust God, not money. Genesis 47:15, it says, when the money faileth, and money does fail. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, don't put your trust in uncertain riches. Put your trust in God. All right, so we have a solution, pirate money. We talked about it in episode 7. We'll talk about it in 2 weeks after we do our election episode. You know what you can do? You can share this episode with your friends and family. People need to hear what we're talking about. We try and do it from a rational standpoint, not fear-mongering. You know, try and bring you the facts, put it in language that's easy to understand, not these highfalutin, esoteric economic terms. That's what Pirate Money Radio is all about. And you can get Pirate Money Radio at piratemoneyradio.com. AFRNet, or wherever you get your podcasts. And then the last thing that we need to do, it's right before the election. What do we need
to
do?
Vote. Yeah. But only one time, right?
Yeah, vote. Every individual that's legal and eligible ought to vote once. America may need a new direction. The trajectory we're on is not really all that great, is it?
No. We need a change.
Yep. All right. So piratemoneyradio.com, and you can hear this broadcast. Share it with your friends. Till next week, we're going to have a post-election special broadcast. How will the vote impact your future? This is Kevin Freeman and Pirate Money Radio.